Greetings and welcome to The Wizard in the Wild. It's been a while since our last episode, and there's really no reason for it apart from the fact that life kind of took over. And it has been a whirlwind of a few months. And I know I said that last time, but this time it really has been something else. Impromptu trips, conversations, people reaching out of the blue. I mean, we'll get into that later in a bit more detail. Launching a new business. There's a lot to catch up on. And I couldn't think of a better person to do it with than my great friend Salim. Salim, welcome.
Thank you very much, Emily, for having me. I mean, it's a privilege to be on your show. And yeah, I think a lot has happened in the recent months, which are worth talking about for sure.
I can't wait. This episode might be slightly different than other ones in that, I mean, there's never ever a set structure. I never pre-plan my episodes, but today it really is just a conversation. So we'll see where it takes us. I can feel the magic happening even as we start this.
I'm excited.
I'm so excited. Where shall we begin? Okay, actually, no, I know where we're going to begin. Let's begin with how we reconnected.
Perfect. Well, I think it was my sister's wedding when I think it was in October. Yeah, we hadn't seen each other for like 3 years, 2 years and a half, maybe. It was the first time, and I think it was instant. As soon as we saw each other, we were just like, boom, and we started talking nonstop for like half an hour. And you told me about all the stuff you've been doing work-wise, and I think we had a very interesting conversation there. And
well, what's funny for me about the reason I brought that up was, and when I talk about the magic of life, was I had seen someone the day before who strangely had spoken to me about your sister. I mean, your sister isn't someone who normally comes up in my topic of conversation or my social sphere because our social spheres don't really cross over that much. Mm-hmm. And but this person brought up your sister or mentioned her in passing. And then you texted me the next day. And as you say, we hadn't spoken for like a couple of years. And you were like, hey, my sister's getting married. Do you want to come to the wedding? And I thought, okay, that's weird. I mean, I'm always talking about the magic of life, but that was that was another level weird. And what was funny about it is that when we reconnected, I mean, it was, and I love those types of friendships. It's like no time has ever passed. We'd always been, I think, very good friends. We'd always had amazing conversation. And it was really just like picking up where we left off.
Yeah, where we left off with some extra news between the time of
the last between time the I timelines.
Saw, I've seen the timelines.
Hi, Salim. Exactly. Here's what's happened in 2.5 years in my life. What about yours?
I think that here's what's happened with me.
I mean, that was also quite funny because there was an ex-boyfriend at that wedding, and he seemed so utterly shocked to see me. We never ever know where life is going to take us, and we never know. I mean, what was funny for me about that wedding, and is that at the time of that relationship, I only knew people through him. Mm-hmm. As in anyone that I met through him. Mm-hmm. So I saw them through his lens primarily. And I assumed that for the most part, they liked him because they were in the same social circle. And the relationship ended. And I honestly have nothing bad to say about the person because, or anyone I've ever dated, frankly, because I was an active participant and you know, that situation. And I learned a lot and I was always true to myself. But what was interesting was, you know, I think in that one, it became clear that we were probably quite incompatible on like a fundamental personality and value base. But so going into this wedding, I did feel a bit nervous. I wasn't scared about seeing him. I mean, there was a part of me that was almost, oh, wow, I'm revisiting a part of my life that I haven't seen in like at that point, maybe 3 years or more. You know, there's always a curiosity like, oh, wow, like this was an old version of me. But I was a bit nervous about seeing everyone else there because I thought, well, at the end of the day, this is his friend's wedding. Yes, I'm your friend and I'm friends with your sister. But, you know, I felt like I was going into his zone. And what really surprised me or was a really amazing reminder was, first of all, I had my own connections with everyone even back then, and those had sustained. So I felt completely at ease and completely welcomed.
I'm glad.
Yeah, no, I had such a good time. And then I actually had some people approach me and they were like, you've dodged a bullet. And it's not to say that he was or wasn't a bullet. I'm not going to pronounce judgment on that. But what was interesting to me was that, again, I'd always seen them through his lens. Mm-hmm. And so to then realize that they maybe saw him differently or that they saw the situation differently. And one person put it very well. They were like, you know, I'm sure he tries his best, but God, you know, like, you're much better off out of that. And I said what I said to you, you know, I said, you know, I have a lot of compassion for the experience and a lot of love for everything I learned and, you know, no hard feelings at all. And they said, Emily, I love that about you, which is that you were always able to hold the situation with a lot of compassion. And it's admirable. And even just someone reflecting that back to me was a really touching experience.
Yeah, always looking at the glass half full, not half empty.
Well, did I no, I haven't spoken about this on the podcast.
I think you have.
Great segue. So this gets into something that, okay, I'm just going to do a brief rundown of the things that happened since the last podcast. So I think I recorded and released the last episode sometime, it was either September or October. And at that time, I was already doing sound healing, but I'm not sure that I spoke about it on the podcast. So PSA, I am offering sound healing services and I'm hosting retreats worldwide. Check us out, emilyalvey.com/trustthemagic. And in November, again, a divine alignment, I was introduced to someone who was organizing a Nile cruise. And I've always dreamt of going on a Nile cruise. And they had one space left. And I said, okay, it's a sign. And it was like literally 2 weeks away. And I contacted them and I said, listen, it was a yoga retreat. I said, you've already got a yoga teacher. And I also teach yoga. But I said, you know, you've got that covered. But would you be interested in me offering sound healing on your retreat? And she was like, Emily, the only thing we're missing is a sound healer.
Which was new for you at the time. You just, you'd only just started. Doing sound.
I'd been doing sound for about 6 months, but it was the first time that I would be going with absolute strangers. So I'd done it and I'd offered it and I was doing it, but, and I'd co-hosted some retreats in the past, but not necessarily with the sound healing aspect. And the sound healing aspect that I did do was primarily with people that I knew.
Friends and family. Yeah.
Friends and family, friends of friends. So there was always a form of recommendation, but to go off with, like, it was 14 or 15 of us. And I really knew no one and they had no knowledge of me or my work. So that was, yeah, that was exciting. And we go and we had this absolutely life-changing experience. I mean, first of all, like just being on the water. I mean, I want to go back. It was, it changed me. It absolutely changed me. And I felt so connected. And I mean, that's a whole episode in itself, which is about ancient Egypt and all of the magic there is to discover. But what I loved about what you just said about the glass half full is on that trip, there was an older man who is currently investing in education and how to make the new generation as happy, I suppose, as they can be. And he was like, Emily, you seem like a very joyful person. What's your secret? And I gave him an analogy of the glass. And I said, it's not so much that I have a glass half full or half empty. First of all, I'm just grateful that I have a glass. And even if my glass only has a tiny amount of water in it, I'm so grateful that I have that tiny amount of water. And I think, oh my gosh, how exciting. I have so much left to fill. And when my glass is full, I think, how exciting. I have so much I can give. And I'd never verbalized it like that before, but it stuck with me. So that was a big one. What else did I learn on that retreat? I remember giving them three pointers as I left. That was the first one. The second one was, it's a line from one of my poems. A temple is not defined by its worshippers. A temple houses God within. And it felt very apt because we were visiting all of these temples. But if you apply it to yourself, how often do you go outside of yourself seeking external validation, forgetting that you have everything already within you? And the third thing from that trip, which I was reminded of, is, you know, in saying yes or no, sometimes we have to say no to others to say yes to ourselves.
Mm.
And if I'm saying yes to someone else, but that means saying no to myself, then that's too big of a compromise.
Mm.
So that was that retreat.
That's great.
And then life continues, and I come back to Cairo, and I'm working, and a lot is happening in between. And then Christmas, I come back, I go to Dubai, and I help my great friend, our great friend, Hadir, open her school.
Mm.
I help her open her school, and that was an amazing experience because I mean, Hadir was on this podcast, you know, 18 months ago, not even 18 months ago, just over a year ago, talking about bringing a school to life.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that she did that in such a short span of time and in such an incredible way was absolutely
incredible.
Incredible. So we're in Dubai and we've opened the school and we've had this incredible time. And you were talking about opening pop-ups, and we'll come on to that.
Yes.
In a second.
It was.
And you talking about that made me think, okay, what do I really want to do? And I'd been thinking about doing my own retreats for a while, even when I went on that retreat on the Nile. And basically, when I get an idea in my head, I tend to just do it.
Mm.
So off I went, and I started hosting my own retreats. And we did one at the Pyramids, which was magical. And then I did an event in Dubai. And now I'm planning a week-long retreat in May in Ibiza, which I can't wait. And again, maybe that's a whole separate episode to talk about what those offer. But the point is, it's been a time of excitement and creation. And at the same time as feeling so alive from all of this, there's also been deep, it doesn't mean that you don't sometimes feel, or that I don't sometimes feel, a deep sense of, I don't want to say being lost, because I don't know that I feel lost, but you know, like, oh wait, is this the right thing? You know, is this enough? Is this what I want to be doing? Okay, I'm going to do this retreat, but is that really like the thing? But amongst all of that, and I think I'm going to talk about this now. I suppose the theme of today that I want this to be is the power of human connection. Shall I keep going?
Which is very strong. Yes, keep going.
Okay, and there's two things that came out to me from this recently that I really wanted and that inspired me to start the podcast again. The first is I received a message from a listener, and it was profound. And so I actually wanted to, I'm not going to name her, but she'll know who she is. And I'll send her a message saying this is about you. But she reached out to me and she found my podcast. I'm not entirely sure how, but it turns out she dated someone that I dated. So she dated him after me. And she heard me talk about him on the podcast. And it was the episode where I dated this guy in London in my early to mid 20s. And basically found out that he'd matched with one of my best friends on Bumble, which is how the relationship ended, because that was obviously a no-go. And she reached out and sent me the most touching message, basically saying that, you know, she'd experienced a similar ending with him, and that it was never about me, but there was, you know, clearly some form of deception attached to his shadow. And she complimented the podcast and my poetry and the way that I'd catalyzed all of my experiences in life into a form of art and into a form of creativity, and basically a bit like a lotus flower taking the shit and turning it into something beautiful. And we're talking about something that happened 6 or 7 years ago. And so for this person to reach out, like, it honestly changed my life in some ways, because I would never have expected to receive that message. I mean, ever. That there's nothing that could have been said or done that would make me think that I'd receive this email from this person. And in such effusive, warm, complimentary terms.
Receiving the message was unexpected, and what the message held.
And what the message said, and also unexpected. Like the length of time. And do you know what it reminded me? And it's something I always say, but do you know what? Like, God taught me my own lesson, or reminded me of a version of truth. Answers always come at the right time. And often when they come, you don't need them anymore. It's like when someone apologizes 4 years later. You're grateful to receive the apology, but you realize you don't really need it. And it was, yeah, it was wow. So, you know, there is real power. Like, if there is, if you're listening to this and there's someone that you want to reach out to them. because even if you don't meet them, even if you don't know them, it will have an impact. And the second experience I had of that was actually today when I was sitting in a coffee shop and a girl walks in, sits down with her best friend, and she burst into tears. Mm-hmm. And honestly, seeing that girl, like, I wanted to cry seeing her because it just reminded me, I felt so much compassion for her pain. I mean, I've been heartbroken before. It's no surprise if you're listening to this podcast. I've written books about it. I've spoken about it. But really, when I saw her, I was reminded of myself, not honestly, in real terms, not that long ago. And I think I wanted to avoid talking about that for a long time because I don't know whether it's that I didn't want to acknowledge the pain or I didn't want people to think that I was still not over it because I was talking about it, or like, even actually, funnily enough, I spoke about it in one episode. And someone from a different boyfriend reached out to me and was like, I heard that you were really affected by the breakup. And I was like, dude, like, I dated your friend like X years ago. This is something different. Mm-hmm. And it was just funny. You know, I was like, everyone always thinks everything applies to them. So anyway, it's funny. But yeah, I was deeply, deeply heartbroken. And I experienced such deep grief. And you know what, like, not that long ago, I was the one sitting at a table in a coffee shop with my best friend sobbing. And so I went up to her and I said, you know, like, I couldn't help but overhear, and basically, you're going to be okay. Like, I've been sat here not that long ago and everything will be fine. And she was so touched. And I gave her a hug and I was like, you know, like, it's okay. And again, my point is, I think that the power of human connection, because really what helped me get better was, in the last episode, I talked about how I wanted to transform my experiences into joy, which I did. I was very conscious about making choices that would be and feel joyful. But really, the common denominating factor was connection. Wherever I went and whatever I was doing, I was connecting with people in a very pure way. And, you know, we're social creatures. We're not meant to sit alone. And, you know, I always say, like, heartbreak is such, it feels so acutely personal when you experience it, but it's something that the entire world has felt at some point in time. So yeah, those are the main things I wanted to share for today. Sorry, it's been a bit of a monologue.
No.
Salim, over to you.
Always happy to hear. And where do I begin? Okay, let's go back to the glass being half full, not half empty. Mm-hmm. And what you said of, even if you have a little bit of water in the glass, you're so happy to see what you can fill it with and how you're going to fill it.
Mm.
And then even when the glass is full, it's great, because then you can pour some into other people's glasses. And I think some people forget that it's important to fill your own glass first so that you can start filling others and helping others, but making sure you're in a position to do so without harming yourself at the same time, if you know what I mean.
Mm.
So yeah, we can start from there. And I mean, we all have glasses and we all are thinking how ways we could fill them or ways we could share some of the water we have with other people.
And I suppose also where do I deplete myself?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think sometimes it's not just about filling my own glass. It's sometimes I actively empty it without even realizing.
Mm.
So with me, that might be my anxiety or a form of anxiety,
mm-hmm.
or like a form of social paranoia,
mm-hmm.
where I would probably disconnect from people or doubt the connection that was there,
mm.
and then realize that I'm completely in my head or it's completely irrational, or, you know.
Mm.
So how do you fill your own glass?
How I keep my own cup full or how I fill my cup up? I think this
are they different?
For sure.
How are they different?
Just like you said, you could empty your cup subconsciously through thinking anxious thoughts or worrying about the future or worrying about the past. All those sorts of stuff, I feel like, somehow drain your cup in ways you don't even know how.
Mm.
So let's talk about how I fill my cup up.
How do you fill your cup?
Well, I think I fill my cup by setting really hard challenges or setting myself goals, which I find really challenging, and going about trying to achieve them.
I mean, can we talk a little bit here about your accomplishments?
I mean, of course.
We should definitely mention the fact that you're on the national rugby team.
Yes.
So when you hear Salim talking about setting himself challenges, he's not just talking about ticking off a to-do list every day like most people.
Mm.
You are someone who, you know, you are an elite athlete.
Mm.
And I actually really saw that the other day, which was, I think you have a, you clearly have an innate ability with, I would say, probably any sport.
Mm.
No, I mean, you're going to be modest about it, but you definitely have an affinity for it and an ability to push yourself and challenge yourself mentally and physically to reach the top.
Yeah, I think, don't quote me, but really good athletes are, firstly, yeah, they have to be extremely talented, but on top of being really talented, they need to be really disciplined as well. And they have to have the mental toughness to go back and train and keep trying. And because so many players across all sports who are gifted, so to speak, some, I don't know if you notice, but some, I think some kids or some of your friends at school, you just notice that this guy is gifted. He just has, God has given him a gift to be really good at this one thing or one sport or something. Usually they don't go the distance. They fizzle out perhaps after university or after school, because if they don't work on having the mental and the discipline aspect to complement their talent, then it just, life has so many distractions and it's so easy to stray off the path which you think you want to walk down, or you've set yourself a goal. You need not just the talent to be able to achieve that goal, but the discipline to stay on that path towards the goal. So yeah, I think joining the national team was tough, because although I didn't make it on the team to go to Saudi and represent the country in the Arab League, I still made it to the final stages of selection, which meant going weekend after weekend, training camp after training camp.
Well, and that's a really good thing as well, which is, you know, when we look at what success, because at the end of the day, you did get selected for the team. It's just that not the entire team traveled for that particular tournament,
mm-hmm.
but you were told that you were selected for the next tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is something there, because I remember that you were very disheartened when they told you that you couldn't go to Saudi. And there was a part of you, not a big part of you, but I think a small part of you that was like, okay, well, this is it. You know, I'm not going to Saudi. I have to rethink my entire life. And I remember telling you, but Salim, you know, what about the next tournament? You know, this is just a stepping stone for you to keep building.
Mm-hmm.
And then sure enough, you were selected.
Of course. I mean, I was selected. And unfortunately, that tournament then got canceled. But I think people don't fail. I think they're just not ready yet. So I think instead of viewing something you don't achieve as a failure, I think you should view it as, okay, how can I get better? And how can I prepare myself more to achieve what I want to achieve, so to speak? And that's why I go back to, I don't think you fail. I think you're just not ready yet. And it's a great mentality to have. I think it's helped me through lots of stuff, through school and university. And even after university, like, you can't give up. You have to keep trying.
But again, on that, like, we had a very interesting conversation recently where, and it's easy to say from a place where, you know, I mean, I used to hate when people say that, oh, I'm in my 30s now. But, you know, there's like, I feel like I've done the 10 years of having anxiety for my 20s. You know, like, I've paid my dues and I've got here. And right now where I'm at is good.
Mm-hmm.
But I've also learned that there is no right time for anything. I mean, everything happens in divine timing, but you can't force something. And so, you know, I was telling you the other day, you're looking, or you have been looking or applying to corporate jobs, which makes sense. You know, you've got an incredible degree from one of the top universities in the UK,
mm-hmm.
and you want to put that to use. But maybe right now you're at an age, you have the gift of youth.
Mm.
And I always say, you know, the gift of youth is that you can try things without pressure. So as much as there's a part of you that wants to, you know, join the rat race and get on the corporate ladder because you think that's what I need to be doing, you know, what if you reframe it and you think, and this is what I said to you the other day, was, okay, well, what if God or the universe, you know, pick your preference, is purposefully not giving me a job? Because what if I'm meant to be doing something else with this time? Mm. What if I'm meant to be using this time to start a business and fail and learn and then start another business? What if I'm meant to be traveling and gaining life experience? What if I'm meant to be learning a new language? What if I'm meant to be doing a bunch of internships, even in unrelated industries, so that I can truly see what I like? Mm. What if I'm meant to be focusing on my rugby? Because when I'm 40, I'm probably not going to have the same fitness to be on the national team. Mm-hmm. You know, you're never going to look back, I don't think, anyway, but, and it's, again, it's easier said than done, but when you're 40, which is a long way away from you right now, mm-hmm. I don't think you're going to look back and say, oh, I really wish I spent more weeks applying for more graduate roles. Mm. I think you're going to look back and say, I'm so happy that I used the time as I did. Mm. Or if anything, maybe it'll be, I wish I really used that free time, because the free time is a gift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, free time is a gift for sure. And I remember you also told me something the other day, which was even in the short term, not when I'm 40, say when 5 years from now, if I do eventually land that corporate job and I'm working a 9 to 5.
Mm. Make it 8 to 8 if you're going into finance.
8 to 8. 8 to 12.
Exactly.
I'd probably look back and be like, wow, I was so lucky to have that free time, and I would regret not taking advantage of it and
for sure
doing the things I want to do, for sure, trying the things I want to try.
And you're so young. And I used to hate when people would tell me I was so young, because in my head I was like, fuck you. Mm. What the fuck do you know? Mm. You know, yeah, I'm young, but I'm alive and it's now, and I still have anxiety and I still want to, and I felt ready. I felt ready for life. But actually, even me, I remember when I became a lawyer, I went straight through. So I was your age when I had become a lawyer. And most people who were on that course with me were 10 years older, and they'd had a whole other life before, you know, and a previous career and previous experience, and it served them, you know? Mm. And I've done it. I mean, I've been fortunate because I'm self-employed by nature of the type of lawyer that I am, which has given me the freedom and flexibility to explore these other parts of my life. But I would have loved to have the freedom to explore at that age. And also because the risks are very low. Like I was telling you the other day, you know, you are at an age where you can literally go and try anything.
Yeah.
And it's fine and it's not weird. I mean, age shouldn't be a factor to prohibit anyone. And if you're 40 or 50 and you want to start again, then start again. But, you know, a 50-year-old intern is a lot harder to, unless it's like that Robert De Niro film, The Intern, but an older intern is much harder to kind of, for so many reasons, probably you'd also have a family then that you'd have to support, or you'd just be constrained.
You, of course, you have, compared to in 10 years, say, or 15 years, if you plan on having a family or even taking care of your parents when they get older. I'm currently at an age where my responsibilities are very low.
Well, that's a really good one, because also the thing is, you know, when you talk about parents, and as I mentioned in the last podcast, my mom got sick last year, and touch wood, things are on the up. But, you know, you don't plan those things. Mm-hmm. And you don't realize how good and free your life is until it's not, and until you suddenly have to plan for like the emergency situation. Mm-hmm. And actually, if you can avoid having to, you know, you can't avoid having to plan for it, but if you can maximize the time that you do have,
when you're not having to plan for that.
Exactly. Mm. You know, like now is the time. I mean, literally the other day I've started Googling African horse safaris because I want to go on. I've been wanting to go on safari for years, and I'm like, well, why not? Like, now is the time. Mm-hmm. I'm fit enough, you know, if not now, when? And I think that's the one thing that I would say has been a guiding force in my life. And it ties into something that you asked me a while ago. Well, actually, you mentioned it as a topic for the podcast. It's not that you were asking it specifically, but you were saying how a lot of people at your age have a lot of questions.
Yeah, a lot of questions. Mm. I mean, you stated some of those questions a few minutes earlier, where it's like, when you graduate from becoming a student to becoming, quote unquote, an adult, it's now up to you to decide what to do. Mm. I mean, before, in school, maybe you had to pick your subjects. Maybe you got to pick what sport you wanted to play. And then for university, you got to pick which university you wanted to go to. And then maybe a few courses, which courses you want to do. But now that you've graduated, it's really up to you what you want to do with your life. And it's like, so should I get that safe job which my parents want? Should I go explore the world and travel? Should I start my own business? I mean, so many questions. Should I settle down and find a partner for the rest of my life? And I think sometimes...
The answer at 22 is no. It doesn't end well.
People my age get really stuck with those questions and they dig themselves a...
But do you feel paralyzed by too much choice?
Me personally, no.
Because I think when you were saying that, it made me think, first of all, that maybe there's a personality thing.
Mm.
Like if I see a menu that has pages and pages of choice, it can be a bit overwhelming.
Of course.
But for the most part, I'm excited that I have options. But there are some people who they actually don't want that many options.
Mm. I think having options is actually a blessing, and it's something you should thank God for every day, because other people might not have those options. Other people might not have except one option, which is to work so they could earn a living so that they can eat tomorrow. Is it, you know what I'm trying to say? It's like, if you do have options...
Choice and time are a luxury.
Choice and time are a luxury, and they're a blessing, and they're not something you should take for granted, and they're definitely not something you should feel like are causing you pain or anxiety or any sort of worry in your life. No, it's always better to think of it as a positive thing, like, wow, I'm so blessed, I'm so lucky, I'm grateful to have all these options, I get to choose, and I get to try, and I think...
And I get to change my mind. Mm-hmm. That's the one thing I keep coming back to, which is that, because, I mean, it ties into all of it, which is, you know, oh, what do I do? Do I get the job? Do I travel? Should I buy a house? Should I not? You can change your mind at any time. And I think people forget that. You know, they lock themselves into things, or they think, oh, I'm going to get this corporate job and I've got to be there for the next 30 years, or I have to do all of this in one particular way. And the truth is, there is no right answer. Nobody knows. Nobody has a clue. Anyone who tells you that they know is lying or deluding themselves. Because, I mean, but seriously, and that's one of the things that COVID taught me. And I probably said this to you the other day. I told someone the other day, I can't remember who, but you know, when COVID happened at the beginning, and I've probably said this on the podcast before, but at the time, at the very beginning, I was like, oh my God, am I going to die? Seriously, I was like, this is it. It's the end of the world as we know it. I'm basically locked up in a flat by myself in London. My parents live abroad. And I'm just like, all of my friends left because they basically fled back to go back to wherever it was, either the English countryside or abroad. And I'm sat there and I'm like, this is it. I've worked like a maniac and I'm in this job and I'm going to die. And what was it for? No, seriously. And that put a lot of things into perspective, which choice was a huge thing for me, which was and I'd already done a lot of different things at that point in time. I'd already gone and done my yoga teacher training. I'd already started to explore different avenues. But at that point was when I published my poetry books. So I'd written them, but I was like, okay, now's the time for the world to see them. And one of the guiding factors of my life in recent years, and I try and apply it more and more, is I really give myself permission to fail and I give myself permission to change my mind. And I think it's very confronting to a lot of people because they don't understand me, because I think I'm constantly reinventing myself. And or I don't know if that's the right way of putting it. I think I'm constantly adding on. You know, it's not like I'm changing or losing those previous parts of myself, but I am constantly exploring. But I give myself complete freedom and permission that I change. You know, I do the podcast when I feel like doing it and I love it, when I love it. But I don't hold myself to have to commit to doing it every single week for a year, because that's what you need to do, you know? I've started doing these retreats, which are sound healing and energy retreats that incorporate some yoga, some poetry, some other elements. But you know, I'll do those for as long as it feels good. And if I want to change or do a different format, like, that's fine. You know, right now I'm here, but I might go somewhere else. I mean.
Yeah, which all ties back to the point you made, was like, constraint. Don't decide this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life and it starts today. And
also because we just don't know. And that's when you close yourself off to to possibilities. Mm. It's like the example I told you. I was like, well, you know, if God is trying to, if God is not giving you a job because you're meant to be exploring the world right now, but if you keep ignoring that and you keep viewing it as, no, I'm failing at getting a job, I'm failing at getting a job, instead of saying, okay, wait, I'm getting gifted free time. Mm. Or at least if you don't want to go that much into the spiritual belief, right now I don't have a job and that's out of my control because I've put in all the applications I can. So I have this free time. How can I use it to the best of my advantage to improve myself, to improve my skills, to improve my quality of life? You know, but if you don't take that message and you don't activate it, then eventually maybe God will be like, fine, have the corporate job, but maybe that's not what was really meant for you. You know, it's like when people push and push and push, or they push and push for the relationship. It's a great example, you know. Mm. How many people do you know who've like, honestly, their relationships look like hell. Mm. No offense, but they look so unpleasant, draining, ups and downs and all around. They're like, no, but it's like work. You have to make it work. And then eventually they get married and you think, God, but was that really the right thing? And sometimes I think, for me at least, it's about taking my foot off the pedal and letting life guide me and being open and being responsive. And it comes with a huge amount of trust and faith, and also a huge amount of pain sometimes, because it means being open to things changing. Mm. And in some ways it might seem like I'm very comfortable with change, because like I was just saying, I do a lot of new things, but I find change deeply challenging. Mm. Because if I love someone or something, then I am attached and I don't want it to change. And as much as I love the excitement of not knowing where life will take me, there is a part of me that wants to know that I'm going to be in this house for the next 30 years. And we're going to, you know, of course I'm human. We all have it. But I think it's about recognizing it and managing it to the best of your ability.
Yeah, no, for sure. I couldn't agree more.
What's something you've learned from me in these last few months?
Something I've learned from you. I think you taught me that you should pursue what you want to pursue and really just go for it and give it a try and see if it works. If it doesn't, who cares, you know?
At least you'll know.
At least I'll know. And I think the way you taught me that, or the way you've inspired me, was through doing your retreats, seeing you hearing you speak about them first, and then actually making them come to fruition with the ones you did at the pyramids and the one you should inshallah do in May in Ibiza is really inspiring, yeah. And especially for someone who's just graduated, who hasn't done anything outside his education or his sports, or
and but see, and look at how funny it is that the way we talk about ourselves. Mm. Someone who hasn't done anything outside of their education and their sports, from one of the best universities literally in the country and the world, and who's on the national rugby team. You know, that's what's so funny. It's like, I relate to that, because I say the same to my friends. I'm like, oh my God, I've done nothing with my life. And they're like, what? They're like, you're constantly doing. I was like, I know. But there is one more lesson though that I'll share in all of that, which is, when you do something, do it because you love it, not because it needs to be successful. When I started doing my sound healing classes in Cairo, no one would come. Mm. I mean, I was doing them for free, for one or two friends, you know, going around, and people were like, oh, what's this? I don't really understand it or know it. And it started really slowly. But I was so committed to it that I would go even if no one had signed up. Mm. And I would be present in the studio with my balls and ready, because that was me saying energetically, I'm here for this. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm committed. And a few months later, I was doing sold out classes, waitlisted classes. And that just, you know, it happens over time, but you're not, I mean, sometimes you can start something and it be sold out initially, like, wow, amazing. But even with my first retreat at the pyramids, I mean, retreats are something I've been on loads, as I said, either co-hosting or guest teacher or even as a participant. And I'd been wanting to do my own really for a long time. And what was amazing to me was going back through my phone, or like my notes, I realized that I had written in June of last year, April, I was in LA. I'd written how, like, trust the magic retreats, ? And I forgot about it. I really forgot about it. And I was just living my life. And then all of a sudden, boom, here it comes, you know. But even when I did that, when I decided to do it with very little, planning. Not that it wasn't planned, but I mean, with very little spare time to give myself. There was a very quick turnaround time between me deciding, right, I'm going to do this, and me putting on the first event. I mean, I literally think it was 10 days. And again, I was at peace with the fact that I might do it and no one might show up. But I was like, it's okay, because I'm doing this one for me. And people did come. And we had a great time. And actually in that moment, and I haven't said this before, but I'll say it, but I think one of the biggest things that has always plagued me is whether I'm doing the right thing, quote unquote. And I always say that that's a hard question, because I think purpose is not a job. Purpose is in a gift we come to share. So I say, for example, if I have things to share, or let's say that my voice is a gift, I can share my voice as a lawyer. I can share my voice on the podcast. I can share my voice as a yoga teacher. I can share my voice through my written poetry. Those are just different avenues or mechanisms for it to happen. But when I was hosting that retreat, I felt like I was exactly where I needed to be. I felt so at peace. And I just felt like I was adding real value to people. And that was incredibly humbling.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad you felt that way. I'm glad you did your retreat and you're planning for your big one now.
It's going to be amazing. I'm so excited.
Shout out to Emily's
Ibiza.
Ibiza.
Oh, we're going to Ibiza. Do you know that song? That's probably before your time. Probably weren't even born.
No, I don't.
It's by the Venga Boys. You know, back to the island. Na, 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 na.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we're going to have a party. Na, 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 na. Oh, on the Mediterranean Sea. E-o, e-o, o-way-o, o-way-o. No, okay, well, that's my singing for today.
No, I do not know that song.
Oh, well, we learn something new every day.
So I remember we spoke about this concept of waves.
Let me find the video.
Yeah.
When a surfer gets up on a wave, they enjoy the present moment, even though they know with certainty that the wave will eventually end. They fully enjoy this wave with the wisdom and awareness that there are always more waves coming. The surfer knows they don't have to ride every single wave that comes their way. They have the freedom and the power to choose which waves to take and which waves to let pass by. The surfer knows that the only way to live is by putting themselves out there in the water. You can't catch any waves sitting on the shore. There's always a risk of getting crushed by a wave, but the rewards are worth it.
I love that.
I think that the wave can be applied to so many things. And I think it's an important reminder to really live in the moment and be present in what you're doing.
You know what I love the most about what that says? The surfer enjoys the wave even though the wave will end. I mean, it's kind of like what we were just saying about wanting to know the future, wanting to know that I'm going to have job forever.
He's not
or I'm
going
to have
about...
this house forever or this partner forever. Like,
he's not worried about that.
Yeah.
He's not worried about the future.
No, and it will end. Everything ends.
Everything does.
Everything changes. You'll have a house. One day you'll sell it. You know, you'll have a partner. Maybe you break up. Or one of you dies, even if you don't break up. Like, you know, there is...
It's inevitable.
You will have moments of contraction and expansion with yourself and with others.
I think it really is a reminder to enjoy the moment and enjoy what the world has to offer right now. And also going back to what you said earlier, which is there is no perfect time. The perfect time is now.
You know, it's one of my favorite, it's not one of my favorite, that's a lie, but I wrote a poem called Arrogance in my first book. Maybe I'm going to read it, because you know what, it also applies to relationships.
You write a lot of poems, Emily, don't you?
I know, I need to do book number 4.
With 3 books already.
3 books already. Arrogance. I love this, but I think it's so true. It is an arrogance of our generation that we think we are better off alone. The time isn't right. You don't yet own a home. Your job isn't stable. You've just taken out a loan. You're scared of obligations, of being trapped or tied down. But love doesn't trap you. It's the other way around. Herein lies the secret. The time is never right. the secret pray do listen is to find love and hold on tight. From page 12.
Which book?
Inhale, number one. But yeah, you know, you hear that a lot as well. People, oh, it's not the right time. And it's funny because, again, I do believe in the right time, quote unquote, which is when things are flowing. But equally, I think a lot of people cheat themselves out of experiencing something fulfilling because they convince themselves the time isn't right, whether that's in a relationship or in a new business venture, even going on holiday. Mm. Oh my gosh, I was talking to someone the other day and they haven't been on holiday in like 10 years, okay? They haven't been on a real holiday, mm-hmm. like proper break somewhere new, somewhere whatever. And I was like, so you're going to go on holiday? And they've been talking about going on holiday. They're like, oh no, I think I've left it too late to book. Maybe I'll go in the autumn. And I was like, oh my God, like, mm-hmm. you're never going to go on holiday. just book, you know? And it's funny, And actually, this is another story, and it's the reverse of the right time, which is there's never a right time, I think, when we're using time as a limiting factor, but the time is always right if we're looking for something expansive. So the point is, there is no such thing as the right time, but the time is always right. If you open your eyes, because someone said to me recently, they said, oh, I haven't experienced the magic of life in the way that you describe. And I said, you definitely have. You're just not opening your eyes to see it. You know, the signs are always there. You just choose whether you want to see them or not. Mm-hmm. And so I was with this friend who was complaining about a gardener that they had. The gardener was terrible. He was a liar. He, you know, was basically killing off the plants in the garden and not fixing things and just really, really dreadful, dreadful gardener. And she was like, but, you know, I can't fire him until I find a new one. And we were talking about how we're going to find a new one. And we leave her house. I mean, it's a business project. So we leave the business site and we literally drive maybe 100 meters. And I suddenly see a villa that has workers in it. And I just had a feeling. I just said, hey, do you do gardens? Do you do gardening? Is there someone here who can do gardening? And they're like, oh, I don't know. I said, no, can I talk to your boss? Is there a manager or someone? Anyway, the guy comes down, felt like great energy. I was like, get in the car, drove him back 100 meters, said, this is what we're looking for. Can you do this? And long story short, he said yes. And he's the most amazing gardener. And she fired the old guy. And even in that moment, by the way, like even though she'd found this amazing new guy and she tried him for a few days and everything was great, there was a part of her that was resistant to the change. Mm-hmm. Oh, maybe I should call the old guy back, even though he was a liar and like a dreadful gardener. Mm-hmm. But anyway, my point is that when you know, ask and you shall receive. If you put out the intention of, okay, I need a gardener, open your eyes, like you never know.
And that's, I think that goes for everything in life, not just gardeners, because most people or lots of people are afraid to ask. And that's all they need to do is just, people are willing to help people.
And things are open.
Things are open and they're simpler than they seem.
I mean, when I did this first retreat, the one at the pyramids, almost immediately afterwards, I think before I'd even done the pyramids, I was thinking, okay, it just came. I was like, I want to do it a week. Mm-hmm. And it suddenly came to, I was like, Ibiza. And again, like the magic of life, how funny that I spent all of that time there last year, because actually without realizing, I was doing all of this recon that would help me for these retreats. And I thought of a particular place and I just emailed them and I said, are you free on these dates in May? And they were like, yeah, we're free that week. I think it's a constant dance with trusting God/the universe and being proactive. So it's like taking a step, trusting that that will also show you the way and being willing to pivot. You know, and things not working out, it's not rejection, it's redirection. You're just being redirected every time. And it doesn't have to make sense now, but at one point in the future, it will. Mm. And it brings us back to the beginning. By the time you get an answer, maybe 6 years down the line by email, you know, you might realize that you don't even need that answer anymore, or something that at the time seemed so confusing. You know, you'll have evolved and your life will have moved on.
I heard someone in an interview answer this question, which was, what's the biggest lie you've ever heard?
What's the biggest lie you've ever told? That's a good one.
That's a good one. Mm. And his answer was, it's not that simple.
Mm. That was the lie? The lie is that it's not that simple?
That's the lie.
Mm. I think I'd probably agree with that, actually. I think the biggest lie, though, are the lies that we tell ourselves.
Like what?
I can't do this. I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy.
Mm.
I'm not lovable. I'm not smart enough. I don't belong.
Mm.
It's poison.
Why do you think we tell ourselves these lies?
I think the ego is addicted to suffering.
Mm.
And I think that they're narratives that we probably learn from a young age. And I think sometimes subconsciously we can feel, when I say we're addicted to them, it's because people will say that they want to feel good, but actually when they don't feel good, it's comforting because it's a pattern they've already been in. And then there's no responsibility, right? Because if you suddenly truly accept that, wait, that's a lie I'm telling myself and I do belong, then it's okay. I have to confront my feeling of not belonging. And I have to confront my feeling of being lonely and whatever wound is beneath that. And that can be quite hard to look at. And sometimes it's easy to just say, oh, well, I don't belong anyway.
Mm.
I'm not invited anyway. Mm. Nobody loves me anyway. Because it also creates a distance and a dissociation. But I think the greatest gift, one of the greatest gifts that we can give ourselves and others is, I always say truth with a capital T. So it's even in those moments, it's being like, you know, this is the story that I'm telling myself. Because probably you'll have someone opposite you, at least if they're a loving friend, who will be able to mirror back the situation in a loving way and say, hey, like, I will name her for this. I love Hedir for this. She's so good. Like, if I call her and I say, oh, I'm feeling X, Y, Z, she'll be like, Emily, like, don't tell yourself lies, you know? Watch your mind. And sometimes we just need to be reminded as well. We need, like I said at the beginning, we're social creatures. And so we need connection and community to ground us and to remind us of certain things. I think that brings this session. I should say episode, but it feels like a session of some kind. It feels like we've entered a magical vortex realm. But before we go, like all time, Salim, ask me anything.
Ask you anything. If you could go back to your 20-year-old self and give them one piece of advice, what would that piece of advice be and why?
I was asked that question on Instagram about a year ago, and I recently read my answer, so it's fresh in my mind.
I mean, perfect.
Well, I would tell her more than one thing, but if I had to distill it, and it's, again, it actually ties back into the beginning of the episode, is that everything will be okay. Even if you can't see it right now, be true to yourself. Keep being true to yourself. Actually, I would just tell her I love her. I just tell her, you know what? I love that you try.
Mm.
I love that you give everything you've got, whether it's to your friendships or your work or your poetry. You know, you're going to get your heart broken and it's fine. It's okay. You'll learn. You'll grow. It gives you compassion. It teaches you compassion. I had compassion for that girl today because I'd felt it.
Mm.
You know, I could really empathize with her pain.
Mm-hmm.
And you will expand and you will grow. And I think when I look back at myself, it's not so much what I would tell myself, but one of the things I'm proudest of has been my ability to keep my heart open and also to have compassion for who I was. And she's a very different Emily than who I am today.
Mm.
And, you know, part of the reason I started this podcast was also to be honest and about all of our failings. I mean, our triumphs, but also our failings. So, you know, I've had my heart broken, yes, but I'm sure that I've broken hearts. I've fucked up in my own friendships. I'm sure I've had times when I've been unkind or unforgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And we learn, you know?
We live and we learn.
We live and we learn.
Yeah.
Salim, thank you for coming on today.
Thank you very much for having me. I mean, it was a pleasure.
Thank you for your time and your energy, your trust, your truth with a capital T.
Mm-hmm.
We're ending just in time with prayer.
Mm-hmm.
God is with us. Thank you for joining and see you soon.
See you.
Thank you for joining The Wizard in the Wild. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Don't forget to rate, review, share, and subscribe. Thank you so much for all your support. We can't wait until next time. Until then, don't forget to stay magic.